Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Discover the Copiah Advantage. Copiah County is a Mid-South gem with a spirit of opportunity, a business-friendly environment, and access to major transportation networks. Copiah County, let's do business. Visit CopiahWorks.com today and discover the Copiah Advantage.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between. Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
My goodness. Who says you can't grow celery in Mississippi or Louisiana or Alabama for that matter? Good morning, good afternoon, good whatever time of day it is that you're listening to this program. We are live on Saturday morning as usual, and quite frankly, admiring pictures already from friends who are texting in with their surviving. What survived the weather of this week? Let's just put it that way. Some of the vegetable gardens took a bit of a hit, and on the other hand, my other neighbor, once they got the hickory tree cut out of her yard, the garden was still under there, pretty much intact. Not entirely, but pretty much. So those are good pieces of news to start the morning here on the Garden Mama Show. What are you up to? What are you growing? What's working? What's not? I've got a few things that are working. I got a few things I'm struggling with a little bit. I think I have a geometry problem, Lance. I'm hopeful that somebody's going to be able to help me with this.
Not me. I never pull out that.
I did not say that. I didn't.
No, I was just going and throwing that out there. Just
electronics, you're all over it. Yeah, I get that.
There's certain things I think I'm okay at. But.
Well, a lot of life does seem to be three-dimensional Tetris, you know, trying to figure out what's going to fit into what and with the other thing next to it and all that sort of stuff. But I have a staghorn fern that is essentially a globe, and you realize that they have shields on them. That's the part that is actually the part that grows. The rest of it is kind of the support network for it, and you have to put that on a board or some wire or something. But this one was a gift, and as it has developed, I haven't done anything with it. I was tempted this week to take a machete to it and just chop it in half, but I couldn't bring myself to do that.
Yeah, that thing is so interesting.
It goes in all different directions.
I've never seen such a plant in my life.
There's enough there to cover a fence with boards of staghorn fern, but they are all sort of up in each other's business because the whole thing was facing one direction. And the person who gave it to me said it was staying too wet because it had fallen off the tree and was leaning on that side. This is what happens to plants. So, of course, I said, sure, I'll take that. Now it's completely a globe of staghorn fern. Do y'all like those? Does anybody else grow them? We can talk about that today. We can talk about whatever's on your garden mind today. Might be a good day to, I don't know, celebrate Mount St. Helens. It erupted on this day in 1980. That's a minute ago. It was quite a thing. It told us a lot. But it's also International Astronomy Day. So if you'd rather look up, that's fine. There's a lot to see. Some really very cool things. The Horsehead Nebula and things being captured by the Webb Telescope are particularly worth your attention should you decide to do that. Love to take your phone calls and your texts. We've got Squash on the text line from Mark, and we've also got, hello to that celery. Pretty good-looking tomatoes, though, and I like that. There was a lot of wind in Rankin County where he lives. You guys got this again was the situation where there certainly were trees down and whatnot in my neighborhood, but it was more hop, skip, and jump. And in some other parts of our state, it looked to me like if they were not tornadic, it was certainly straight-line winds. And that's always very, very dangerous for all of us. I want to make sure that as we go through these periods of time when we've got some rain and then we get some great growing conditions, you remember that often you'll need to fertilize just a little bit, whether it's flowers or vegetables, not anything that's in bloom and setting fruit necessarily, but if you've got, for example, I have basil plants inside the pots with the tomato plants, that's okay. I can still fertilize the basil. It's not going to bother the tomatoes to have a little bit of fertilizer added to their environment. It's also real important to remember deadheading. I deadheaded roses this week, and they've already put on another set of buds. It probably took about 5 days in the case of that one rose. That was. It's a very nice rose. It is one of the knockout roses, and it's a pink one. It's very nice. I saw a yellow knockout this week, though, y'all. Is anybody growing that one? The older yellow knockout was dark yellow and really didn't grow very well for me. I had it for a couple of years, and then it just kind of didn't make it. But this one looks more like a Floribunda type rose. It's got more and slightly smaller but very vibrant pastel yellow flowers. I was interested if anybody's growing that one. Let me know. I think it's pretty, but I don't know. It might not suit me. I've got to get the flowers off of Peggy Martin. She's just finished out the bloom. This is one of those things that we don't necessarily think of to do, and it's very important. If you've got a rose like that, that is a climbing rose that blooms primarily once, she might put on a few flowers in the fall, but generally speaking, in my garden in zone 8, she blooms once really big in the springtime, and then after that, it's kind of chancy. So I do want to get the old flowers off in case there's an opportunity for any more flowers to form, but I will also leave a few of the flowers to form hips for the birds. That's always a subject that we get. You know, do you leave the pods, do you leave the flowers on so they can form seed pods, so they can form rose hips, or do you instead take them off so you get more flowers? And it is kind of a trade-off. In the case of Peggy Martin, I'm not going to get a lot more flowers, but I would like to have some hips, and since it's a fairly big climbing rose, it's up in the area where the birds can get to them when they make, it takes 6 or 8 weeks for them to make a hip. And I'll tell you the truth, I said this a few weeks ago, that everything we've recognized that stuff is blooming at a faster pace or in an earlier point. I don't know who keeps records of those things except a couple of gardeners in England, but I know that the mimosa does not ordinarily bloom at the same time as the magnolia. They usually go in succession here. My Asiatic lilies don't usually bloom at the same time, both of the colors, and now they are. And that, so it's all kind of happening at once. The question this week has been, does this mean that the summer is going to be brutal or that it will be dry, or what could it possibly mean? And we don't know, but we are looking at conditions that will not get cooler than last year. We may not have the seriously difficult temperatures that we had there in the 105 range for several days. We don't know about that part, but we do know that we're going to have at least some really unpleasant weather for this, all of these things. And really, if you want to recognize what's going on, look at how fast your blueberries are ripening. Ordinarily, I don't have blueberries as ripe as they are now until at least the 1st of June. Granted, I do not live in, they don't grow in full sun. They grow in mostly sun. But that does speed things up, and I'm not a commercial grower by any means, but they are getting riper and they're more beautiful than they've been. I don't know if this means that we're going to have a faster, harder, hotter summer, but just like I said 2 weeks ago now, the Nandinas had already bloomed out and were forming berries. Saw the first ripe ones on the Nandina yesterday. That's way too soon. Way too soon. Well, hey, Pam from Sardis, welcome in. Ooh, pretty, it's raining. That's nice. That's a gorgeous garden. Wowie zowie, I like that. Sometimes you just have to admire other people's. You know, Julia Child said she learned something every time she went into someone else's garden. I'll tell you what I'm learning from Pam's is that the fence around it doesn't have to be tall, but it needs to be sturdy. And it looks great. It's lovely. Really, really great. Pretty rain. It did rain in Jackson at my house. I have to say that because it's so spotty in my neighborhood. In the meantime, it's pouring down rain, 4 inches in Brookhaven? Hey, y'all. So it's been variable in where the bands have been going, but I can't say that anything is too dry where I am. It's probably not that way either for you. Don't forget, if you have tomatoes ripening, There's probably a squirrel family sitting nearby waiting to take a bite of that nice, even a green one sometimes, but certainly as they begin to ripen. And the birds are particularly interested once they get that nice red color and they know that it'll be sweet for them. Here's the deal. Tomatoes of every sort, no matter what shape they are, have shoulders. Now that means you've got the stem and you've also got the part of the tomato that goes out from the stem. Generally speaking, it then gets either bigger or smaller or rounder or more oblong. But you've got that little space that goes out from the stem called the shoulders. When the shoulders turn pink, you don't have to worry about it anymore. You can pick those, take them in, and they will ripen in your house. Or if you want to, you can actually ripen them in the brown sack, you know, brown grocery sack, just like you would do in the fall if you ended up with tomatoes after it was too cold for the plants to be outside. So it's not a bad thing to pick them early, and they will ripen with the same taste and the same, you know, great aromas and whatnot, as long as they have begun to get, as long as they are pink on their shoulders. That's the thing to look for. It's really important. Well, that and the time of day. you got to get out there. But no matter whether it's figs or tomatoes or blueberries, all of the prey, all of the pests that are trying to get to them that, you know, that fly in and climb down from the trees, they're all up pretty early. So you may want to do that, too. You probably need to. Here's from the Duff aisle this morning. I thought you all would appreciate this. come on now, who didn't know this? The Entomological Society of America, whom we trust and appreciate grandly around here, are letting us know that there are, in fact, some annual flowers that have a place in a pollinator-friendly garden. Yeah, that's true. Would we have thought that there wasn't? Okay, here was the argument. The argument was that perennials and shrubs and trees that are attractive to pollinators have a more permanent place in the garden, and therefore they're on the map, so to speak. They're on that, I talk about the GPS that the pollinators have. They know that there's, even if every, and they don't, but if every neighbor in my neighborhood took out all the clover, there would still be some at my place that they could come and have in the wintertime, okay? That's just the way that is. But in many cases, in this particular, annuals are thought of as pollinator deserts because they are colorful and they're visually stunning, but many of them have been bred away from nectar production. So there are some that have not only been left with a lot of nectar production, particularly, but there are also some others that you might not expect. For example, Accent Coral Impatience cultivar drew a whole boatload of pollinating insects, in addition to two begonia cultivars, the Cocktail Brandy and Ambassador Rose Blush. The point is, we're testing them and we're finding out things that we didn't know. I'm not going to say that there's no adaptation on the part of the pollinators. I'm sure there is. They're looking for the bright colors and any amount of nectar that they can get hold of. But for those who have felt that those kind of plantings were maybe a little bit trivial in this quest to produce space for pollinating insects, turns out that there is a place for them. And indeed, I've always felt like, I read this argument years ago when it came to designing. One of the big changes in the 20th century was from the concept of bedding out, where you planted annuals in large numbers in many, many square feet, two times, maybe three times a year. You think of pansies in the fall and marigolds in the spring or something like that. But we got away from that as both it became more difficult to have enough labor to do those things on the home scale or even on the commercial scale, but it also because they were not as attractive in their state at that time to the pollinators or to the wildlife, and we were having a different take on our gardens. So it means that there are cultivars that they can choose now when you shop that will make sense. And you believe you me, there will be signs on them. If they happen to be at your garden center, there will be, you know, little stars or something that tell you that this is some of the ones that the Entomological Society have decided will work for you. So I like that. I like the idea that it's going to do that for us. Good morning. Yep, there you go. That's really nice. Sarah's from Winona. Love, love, love our native cactus. So fun. just so fun. Oh, and the other thing, of course, I love it when scientists get surprised. They were surprised that at the ones that actually turned out to be pollinator attractive, it was not the ones that they had predicted. That's why we have science. You can't just think something and have it become a fact. You have to prove it. You have to test it. You have to let other people prove it by testing it. And then we know something. And in this particular case, we're beginning to get a list of cultivars. You can bet, too, that in the next couple of years, there will be an awful lot more opportunities to buy these particular cultivars because there'll be somebody, I don't know, maybe Martha Stewart, that'll put her name on them, you know, and bring up a group of plants. It's not a bad idea. It's worth working on. I like it. We always have to blow up our pictures. Thank you very much. No problem. That's great. I love, love, love native cactus. I'm also crazy about Adam's needle yucca. And I don't really think everybody needs a desert sort of shrine in their garden. But if you like that style, and I do, those are two plants that really do it well. And without much ado in terms of their long life, they're going to be there for ages. And yes, they are, in fact, pollinator friendly. No question about that. Why do you suppose the stomatas on plants, you know, those cells that are on top of the leaf, how do they open? What makes that trigger? We have said for years that there are things that we do to our plants sometimes to make them look pretty. That's not really that great, you know, kind of like putting makeup on me. It doesn't really help. If you wash that stomata with yogurt or with milk, it may look very shiny, or one of those old products, you know, I don't even know, something shine, green shine or something. That's a thing. They don't look real because they don't look real. And in fact, after a period of time that's not very long, the stomatas quit opening and closing. And when they quit opening and closing, the plant can no longer transpire the water that's in it, and the functions of the plant begin to cease. So what they have worked on now is to try and understand how light causes the stomatas to open, so that with better understanding, maybe we won't abuse them so much. Nature Communications is where you can find a whole lot more about this brilliant phosphorylation effect. I love this. It's an event, actually, that does indeed activate the proton pump, and that's what causes the stomatas to open. And it's all triggered by light. So now we know the actual amino acid that causes this to happen. Pretty brilliant. I want to say good morning to some particular good friends today. We don't do that around here, but we're going to do it anyway. Hello to my Tupelo honeys. We will be right back.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from three licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
Superior. It's more than a name. It's a promise that we make to our customers to provide you the highest quality U.S. farm-raised catfish at your favorite restaurant, your family reunion, or on your dinner table. Hey, this is Steve Azar, and I want to let you know that with Superior Catfish, you know the next bite is as good as the first, time after time, made possible by your friends and neighbors here in Mississippi. Remember, there's catfish, then there is Superior Catfish.
Thank you.
Sometimes it's really nice to be right. And it doesn't happen all the time. When I read that name, cocktail brandy, begonia, as being attractive to pollinators, I thought, I know that plant. It's pink flowers, and it's that series of begonias that have the, you know, brandy, whiskey, whatever those names are. And they all, and this one has dark foliage. And sure enough, I'm right. It is indeed. It's a beautiful little begonia. It's a little sempervirens. You know, it's the wax begonia, the kind that you buy in a little six-pack or something, or a four-inch pot maybe. Beautiful, beautiful plant. And in fact, now we can feel that we are doing something important for the pollinator gardens by sticking one of them into a container or putting a row out there in the front of the garden bed. It's really, really a very hardy one, too. One of the things that, when I talked about pinching last week, I made a note to myself, and I believe I talked about this with the garden club that I was visiting with today. Y'all were so sweet, by the way. Thank you. The question of how to get more flowers after the summer doldrums get started, you know, it's so hot and everything's kind of just wilty, or even if you fertilize it, maybe it doesn't respond. You can always cut back annuals. That's the other reason that it's such a joy to grow them, whether it's impatiens or begonias or zinnias or whatever it is. And in fact, when you cut those begonias back, they always look better the second half of the summer. It's just one of those things. I want to say that the other name of the other begonia is vodka, but I don't really know. That has white flowers, I think. But they were real popular for a period of time. I don't know, Rhett. I don't know if we can do that one. I have too much history with that song. I don't know if I can play that. Now, there's not too much off-air humor, but we're going to leave that. We'll just send him our congratulations. How about that? Well, you know what? I saw something this week, and it, if you've ever moved anywhere, if you've ever changed from one place to another, you always want to know what happened. How did that other story turn out, the other timeline, if it had? Turns out that I would have been in San Francisco at the pier with twice or three times as many sea otters laying around on the pier as there used to be. I don't know if I want to be there or not. Goodness.
I will say this for Rhett. I do actually have that song.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I do. It was a while back.
You're going to do it, aren't you?
Well, only if you give permission, but I have the Louisiana LaRue, New Orleans.
Okay, for Rhett.
In the coffer, I have
for Rhett. Okay, we can do
that.
We'll
slide that in the second hour.
Yeah, we'll do that next hour. Stay tuned.
Good.
Wanda's in Carrollton. It's a wonderful song. I'm not saying it's not. I just, if you've ever been anywhere and you're from Louisiana, you hear that song a lot. Hey, Wanda. Welcome in. What's going on today?
Okay, I've got a gardenia. It's probably about 2 to 3 feet tall. This winter, it really took a hit, and when it, you know, started coming back out, the leaves were yellow, green, more yellow, not doing good, and I wanted something that was going to be pretty where it was, so I transplanted it and put it somewhere else in my yard. It continued, you know, not doing good, yellow leaves and everything. I put Miracle-Gro on it. And it is, seems like there's some little new growth coming out on it.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything I can do that would help it along?
Yes. The first thing to ask you, do you also grow azaleas or camellias or hollies or anything like that?
Azaleas.
Okay. The soil that azaleas need is exactly the same thing as we need for that gardenia. It's a naturally acid soil. Uh-huh. So you're on the right track. If you can grow azaleas, you're going to be able to grow this gardenia. When the leaves come out...
Well, my azaleas don't do good either.
Okay, all right. In that case, I'm going to tell you to get in touch with your county agent's office and do a soil test to see whether or not you need to add more organic matter. But in the meantime, I think if you will dress around the base of that gardenia, and yeah, the azaleas too, with some compost manure, that will begin the process of helping. You just put like about an inch deep around the bottom of the plant and then water it in, put a little mulch on top of it. We're just trying to acidify that soil a little bit. Now, what the soil has to do is to let the plant take up iron. And the reason why you have yellow leaves with green veins in them is because it's not taking up that iron. So you can also go to the co-op and get a product with iron in it and fix the way it looks that way. But in the long run, we need to deal with the soil. So do it superficially. Make it look better by getting some spray with iron in it. And then get some organic matter, particularly a composted manure would be really good for this, to put around the base of it and work it in so we can have it be better next year.
Chicken manure?
If it's old, yeah, that's fine.
Because I've got chickens and I've got
You know, bless you. I wish I did too. So get down to the bottom of the pile.
When you say when it's old, how old?
About a year. About a year, the bottom of the pile.
Okay.
You know how it's a different.
Right,
you know, it's a different color and it's pretty dry at the bottom. That's the. That's what we're looking for. Yeah. Super. Okay. Well, let me know how it goes.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate hearing from you this morning. It's really a beautiful, beautiful day to be a gardener. I got to tell you, I'm happy about that. And Jeff is sending beautiful pictures of his tomato garden. We're all, you know, it's gorgeous. He says, of course, getting there. Well, you know how gardeners are. Oh, thank you for that compliment. You should have been here last week. You know. It always looked better some other time. We're terribly modest most of the time. Oh, my goodness. How fun. I don't know. I'll have to see. We'll get some recommendations. If you're in the Gulfport area and you want to see some beautiful plants, where should you go? Paula's there. She wants to know. We all know that there's a lot to do on the coast, so this might be part of some other thing that's going on. That's fine. So about the otters, I wanted to, I'm pretty sure they're going to be running for office any minute now. There have always been sea otters at San Francisco Bay, all right? Sea otters live where there are food sources for them. And because one of their large food sources is abalone, they have been for long years congregating there because there's those fishes. There's also other shelled creatures that they eat. And yes, they do use tools. Now, this is not like this is every bit as clever. They will take one shell and bang on the thing to open the next shell, you know, that sort of thing. But what they have noticed in this particular set of studies, done by, of course, people from UT Austin who wanted to go study sea otters around the world, they've learned that the females use the tools more effectively, and as a result, their tusks don't get as damaged. And that's another reason why they live longer, because they can continue to eat, because they use their tools. Does that make sense? Of course it does. Well, here's the thing. The reason I say that they're going to be running the world, or at least that part of it, there have always been a few that would come up to the piers. And it's a different area. The rocks where they live is in one part, is below the city, but there's piers. And when there's food sources up there, there's a lot of, you know, fishing and whatnot in that area, commercial fishing. But this year, it's a school of anchovies out at the Farallon Islands, which are beautiful, by the way. And indeed, I would go too if I was a sea otter. But what they do is they go out and they feed, and then they come back and they have all these piers and decks and things that are not necessarily in use all the time, and they have laid out there. Well, they've always laid out, you know, a couple hundred, over 1,000 this year. It is wall to wall. It's as if all the relatives you didn't know you had showed up at one time. My goodness, it is something or another. That's really, oh, what a beautiful begonia. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Really pretty. Really, really pretty. I don't know what to say about it. I'll take the truck. I'll leave that at that. Thank you very much, Mark. Oh, my goodness. Why is my tomato one leaf curling? The curling up is okay. It's a reaction to weather. You don't need to worry about that. If it curls under, we've got a different problem. But curling up like that just briefly, it will straighten itself out. It really will, and that it's not a problem. But it's a physiological response to weather. I would, if I were you, I would put a little bit of maybe an inch of or half an inch of some kind of organic mulch underneath here, because that helps to keep the various problems from washing up from the soil surface under tomatoes. But this is not caused by that. This is quite simply just curl, leaf curl. Not a problem. Thank you, Ron in Ocean Springs. Yeah, I thought I was wrong once. I even knew I was right a couple of times. I'm just messing with you. Yes, I see that. I do see that. My goodness, what crazy images this morning. I'm still going for the begonia. I like that. Anyway, so as the sea otters change our world for us, we will begin to have more sea otters probably. And I can see why, if you have been breaking your tusks, opening up abalones, you might decide that scooping up those anchovies was a lot better deal. Get you through the summer at least. I kind of like that. Smart. Can you imagine someone coming to you? Maybe somebody has and I've just missed it. But no, I never asked myself, why can't robots outrun animals? Well, I just figured we hadn't gotten there yet. Okay. But indeed, there's a lot more work than anybody had thought in this particular area, and it doesn't get us anywhere. There's how many millions of dollars have been spent in the effort to create robots that can move even as with as much agility as people, but certainly at the speed that people can do. For example, mountain goats can climb up literal cliffs. We don't have a robot that can do that. We don't have, well, I don't know if you want to know this or not, but cockroaches can lose a leg and not really be fazed by it at all. It might not be good to know that. But on the other hand, it might be really good to know that because it tells us that we're indomitable as creatures, that we robots, or our robots rather, are not really getting to be able to take down the humans. And for that reason, they continue to try. So that leads us to study an awful lot of other things. One of the things that particularly we are talking about is how they move and how they are moving. In this case, once again, UT Austin's got some people that are fascinated by this. They're studying the natural herd mentality of ecosystems like bees and fish and ant colonies. And the result of that is they're trying to get their robots to do smart swarming is the new term for that. So there's always something else that everybody wants us to learn how to do. It's really, really nice. Oh, my goodness, what pretty flowers. Thank you, Paula. Lovely kitten, too. Those kittens are getting big. John's in Meridian. Hey, John, what's going on?
No, not much. I just had a question about some old crepe myrtle trees in a cemetery. They must be over 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And haven't bloomed, and I have no idea how long.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if there was any way to salvage anything from them. Should you just cut down, try to dig up the roots and plant something else, or just what was the best thing to do?
How did the trees look, other than not blooming? I mean, are they in good shape? Are their leaves and trunks healthy?
They're about 70 foot tall, and they're big trees.
Okay, are the leaves?
There's about 20 trunks, I guess, there about 7 to 8 inches in diameter,
mm-hmm.
You know, right there together. Nothing was ever done to take care of them. Mm-hmm. You know, they mm-hmm. just planted them, let them go, and all the suckers and everything mm-hmm. grew up. And mm-hmm.
but
so I got that. That's the situation.
Okay. Are the leaves in good shape? Are they nice and green?
Some of them are.
Okay, but only some.
Some of them aren't.
Okay.
Here's the
answer. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Do what?
If there's five of them that have good leaves on them, I don't have any problem with subtracting everything else, pruning everything else out of this, what has turned into basically a big thicket, I can tell. The fertilizer that you could use to help them bloom is not going to be effective if there's so much plant material there that it can't take it up. You know, the ones that are alive can't take up just what's there if we don't get rid of the other stuff. So I would ask you to send me some photos if you possibly can. I'm going to get Lance to give you my email address off air so you can send them. Because I do think that there's something that we can do here. We can sculpt them. We can take some down. We can do something to benefit the cemetery with it. But I got to take a look at what you've got. Can you do that for me?
I think so.
All right. Hold on for me. Lance is going to give you my email so that you can write it down. And we will be right back.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR benefits and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services.
If someone you know is dealing with addiction, remember they're fighting an internal battle with themselves. They don't need to battle with you too. At Allies in Recovery, you can become an ally. By following a free online course, you'll learn a compassionate approach to reform relationships and start treatment. Lead them to recovery with a method that's scientifically proven to be more successful than others. Start for free at alliesinrecovery.net/sponsored.
It's
you better think about what you're trying to do to me. Think, let your mind go, let yourself be free. Let's go back, let's go way on the way back when. I didn't even know you couldn't have been too much more than tame.
You're so lucky I don't sing out loud. To be Aretha Franklin just for one night, be able to sing like that. Oh my goodness. It won't happen, but I can dream, can't I? A girl can dream. Now, great stuff on the text line. Y'all are fun. Which lavender is this? Come on now. I love this. Kathy planted one last year and one this year, and the one last year did better. Which one is it? It's in bloom. It's lovely. The difference in the lavenders, I sent her this quote from an article. It's not something that I didn't say it myself, but I know the information to be true. There's French and Spanish lavender, and there's a quality on the lavender flower. You can tell by the leaves a little bit, but they look a whole lot alike, and they are the ones that grow in the warmest part of the country, like here and further south from me, about all the way to Hattiesburg at least. And there are ears on the flowers. They're not really ears, but there's petals that stick up, and that's how you tell which one it is. I've sent you a little description of that so that you can tell. But it's really funny how we get started on something, and there's some subtle differences between flowers sometimes. And yes, one will do better than another in your particular garden. I really love that. Trey is treating his bees. These are the happiest bees you're ever going to see if you go to supertalk.tv. You'll be able to join us and see all that next hour. And beautiful plants, Trey. Trey always grows a gorgeous, gorgeous farm, beautiful garden plot, I should say. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Really pretty things from everybody this morning. I really appreciate y'all. I'm looking forward to being able to help with those 100-year-old crepe myrtles. I love the description. There are always... there are areas that you see things planted and you think, well, if they had just done A, B, or C along the way somewhere, this would have turned out a whole lot better. And I know that that's true in this case. If there had just been a little pruning down the way, didn't have to do it every year even, but just some of it, it would help. And cemeteries are places that we tend to leave alone, you know. Let's see. The hydrangea is beautiful. That's lovely. Marcella, I like this. This is really pretty. And she's trying to grow Bleeding Heart. It has curling leaves and turning yellow. It's too wet, I can tell you that. Bleeding Heart is one of those. This is Dicentra. This is not the Clerodendron Bleeding Heart. This is the Dicentra, I believe is the name of it. It is a plant that needs a very moderate environment, and yes, certainly not full sun in the way we have sun in the summer here. This is a good spot with it, with the hydrangeas. But if the soil doesn't drain very, very well, it will continue to get those yellow leaves, and it won't be able to grow very well. Just one of those things. Not unusual, but a pretty plant when we get it going. It's just difficult. It doesn't like heat either, so that's another problem.
It does know where it lives,
It's like some of us, if it were not for sun hats and sunglasses and lots of sunscreen, you might not see some of my friends from June on, But yeah, we know where we live. That's why they invented air conditioning, is what some people would tell you. And in the case of our wet soils, this is really the difference. If you prepare a bed and you make the soil, create the soil so that it drains properly, that's not the end of it. Then you have to pick the plants that can live there. And yeah, you may still have to do a little bit more work on some of them, some of their spaces, or even some of the plants themselves, to get them to put up with the vagaries of our environment. I'm putting up a new shelf in what would be my big room in my house, because there are two plants that have been accidentally sitting next to that window, and they're doing better than they've ever done. It's too wet outside for me to put those plants outside all summer long. If it goes into a drought, it's even worse. Then I have to water them. But in terms of this continuous rain bands, that's going to leave that container soil just too wet. So they're going to have to stay inside. I think I've got to put up a new shelf. We'll see about that. We are on the verge of glory here. We're on the beginning of National Donut Week. So I know that this is going to cause consternation across talk radio. There will be arguments. There will be discussions. And we're just going to set the record straight here. All right. Tell us, Lance.
Well, and I was just going to say, Saturday is No Dirty Dishes Day.
Well, so it is.
We have that going for us.
We count on that day every day at my house.
It coincides with National Visit Your Relatives Day.
I don't know how that works. These are not going to work.
And there was one.
It's World Whiskey Day is my particular.
And then, Saturday is also National Cheese Soufflé Day. So
don't
leave the crusty soufflé pots in the
do
sink
those
while
dishes.
You go see your relatives
do those
today.
Dishes. So. And if your relatives come over, don't let them bring cheese
and if you're going to take them to the International Museum, that's today also.
That's today.
Saturday is also
okay.
International.
Well, okay.
They're packing it in today.
It's everything. And tonight is the beginning of International Astronomy Week.
Well, goodness.
So,
this is just
I have a couple of friends with telescopes. I'm thinking there's a party to be had,
I always loved astronomy. When I in the degree fields that I was fortunate enough to be thrown into, they didn't have a lot of math. And the math options were this, and, you can take astronomy as a math or a science. I'm like, man, I'm in.
Well, then there's a lot of math in there, but they do explain it pretty well. Yeah, that's true.
The greatest math I ever learned was astronomy math.
I had
10,000 zeros to it. And
exactly. Just add it and go to the power of four, and you're fine. You'll get all of that. That's very true. I'm not a huge, great math student. I like math as it is applied, obviously. I like to count money. I like to measure things for recipes. I like to mix up the right stuff to control pests in my garden, that kind of stuff. But there does come a time when you have to decide how much of that math you're going to be able to do. And I knew that horticulture had a little too much for me, and I was going to have to work hard at it. So I did. Ended up going to my only math class that I had to take. And it was Venn diagrams for teachers. It was a summer class. I had no idea what I was getting, but I got credit for it. If I ever needed to teach six-year-olds about Venn diagrams, I'm really good at it. I don't think it helped me, but I do understand that stuff now better. It probably didn't help much with my math.
It took me being in finance for 16 years and studying economics to see the application.
Well, and again, it's always the practicality of it. It's the application.
I was way more interested in learning about the guts of how you come up with all these calculations instead of just looking at them and going, okay, that's what it is. My curiosity at some point, I went, how do you get to that?
Well,
and then
exactly.
I started learning
how does the path take you there, right? And what's going to work and what's not?
And that's what's so fun about doing what we do every Saturday with you and then with Handyman Buddy. It's very similar in that. You want to know everything, but you don't. And it's something – get your mind going. And then you go, okay, now I need to figure this out.
Yeah, now I got to go look at
watch this.
Yeah, see about this. Think about that.
And it was just like learning about that fern the other day. You know, seeing that huge. I was like, what is this?
The staghorn.
What is this? The staghorn. I mean, that was the coolest thing.
This thing is growing in six directions.
And you were telling me how they, you know, how they can hang. I mean, people hang them in trees or they'll grow this way. Mm-hmm. And just, it's so fascinating to see it from
when we take things out of their native environment, sometimes the way we have to grow them is pretty odd compared to how they grow in nature. But if you can sort of replicate those ideas, then you end up with a lot of good. You end up with a lot of good experience growing a plant that you might not have been able to grow.
Well, and I know I've seen them growing off of a tree or something, but I never had any idea what that the actual plant looked like, the guts of it, and you know how it works, and you
those
know,
little
just
shields
fascinating.
And stuff.
Yeah,
and of course the spores and things that are the brown part are of course the future of the plant, and it's kind of fun too. By the way, those of you who want to know how do you sprout that kind of stuff, you need Oasis, and it's hard to find Oasis. So get yourself some and put it in your garden shed and leave it there. You don't need much of it, but when you need it, it's a perfect strata for this kind of thing. You just wet it and lay the seeds on it. Begonia seeds will sprout on Oasis as well.
Ron Popeil would be happy. You set it and forget it.
And with our hat off to Ron Popeil, we'll be back.
I'm Sammy the Shovel, reminding you how important it is to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig anywhere in or around any homeowner's yard. It doesn't matter if you're putting in a new mailbox, installing a fence, French drain, sprinkler system, even a flower bed. You need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig, or you could end up responsible for a water line leak, utility line with gas or propane, or even worse. Safety is in your hands. Call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. But what if the online information about your business is incorrect? Or even worse, not very flattering? If your online presence isn't great, you may be losing customers. SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital's trusted and highly trained team is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today.
Progressive
from the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between. Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Oh, it's a green, green day around here. Lots of things growing, lots of beautiful photos coming in. And we do try to show those off at supertalk.tv for those of you who are kind enough to join us there. I have to remind everybody, because I forgot to do it in the last hour, it's the next Beat the Heat workshop. What is this, you may say? Well, this used to be the lunch bunch at Lakeland, but it's too hot by noon. So we're going to meet at 9:30 in the morning on June 3rd at Lakeland Yard and Garden. Becky Potts has graciously agreed to be with me to do a program about that thing that nobody wants to talk about. Repotting container plants. Some are big, some are hard to do. Others need a particular kind of soil, and we're going to cover it all.
Well, I wanted to mention, and I had the opportunity to go over to Meridian for the Jimmy Rogers Festival last night, and I wanted to say thank you to our wonderful Super Talk family.
Super
there,
family.
And to Leslie Lee, who is the executive director of the Jimmy Rogers Festival and the museum. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful place. And the reason I wanted to mention this is because, first of all, it was just Meridian does a great job with their events.
Oh,
and
it's
such a beautiful place. But we're talking about gardening and plants. And, man, let me tell you, one of the more beautiful downtowns, greenery,
it
trees.
Is.
trees.
You're exactly
and they've done
right.
so much work with planting roses at corners and on 22nd Avenue. Mm-hmm. If you're in the mm-hmm. neighborhood, you really ought to ride through and take a look. It was really funny because as I was leaving last night, and I was just kind of standing
just
outside.
Just a little late.
Well, you know, it was the Temple Theater is where it was. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, Nellie would love this theater. It was such a...
It's a very cool place.
Yeah, and it's got the pipe organ in it. I mean, it's almost... You don't see things like that. So I'm standing out talking to this a girl and her husband, and she asked me a question, and I said, you know, I find that Meridian seems to me, from all the places I've been, to be really doing it right. You know, I've talked to so many of the leaders and said it's probably one of the more progressive, like Jackson or Memphis. You don't have an anchor like a Ole Miss or mm-hmm. a Southern Miss. Mm-hmm. It's doing so many things there organically. And she's like, really, you think Meridian is one of the most progressive? I said, yes, you got to get out and see things, because Meridian is a gem.
Yes, it is.
It is beautiful. But I wanted to mention just what they're doing with the greenery downtown, mm-hmm. how much mm-hmm. impact that makes, and how beautiful it is to just be walking by and say, wow, what a beautiful bunch of roses.
And
right
as
here.
I experienced a couple of weeks ago now, when you follow the directions to go to where you're going to go, there's something nice to look at on every corner,
yeah.
and that's fun. Beautiful plants, beautiful Japanese maples that were just knocking out, you know, red as can be, bright and early on that particular day. Just such a beautiful place and so much fun. I'm glad you had a good time.
Yeah, and I wanted just to give them a shout out because, I mean, it was just one of those things. Folks, get out and go see Meridian. Go to Vicksburg. Go to Hattiesburg.
They got great horticulture.
They're doing so many, Cleveland, doing so many great things out in our smaller and mid-sized mm-hmm. towns. And mm-hmm. you got great leaders and great
people. By the way, the master gardeners at Meridian are really great.
Yeah, I mean, I was blown away. Again, each time I go, I see something unique and new, mm-hmm, the greenery, mm-hmm. the flowers, the beautiful things, and I just wanted to give them a shout out.
Good, and you know, I'm going to go for the pipe organ. Anyway.
Oh man, I wish. Yeah, I want to go back over there when they just crank up the pipe organ.
But. Get to hear somebody play a concert. That's fun. Wow. You all are full of wonderful stuff today between the text line, the phone calls, and those who are kind enough to blow up Garden Mama as well. It's really quite a morning. Y'all are busy, and I like it. A couple of things. First, the biggest thing, though, is Charlie and Brenda are having bees all over their and they're big bees. They're all over their tomatoes, and they say they're eating the leaves. I'm surprised. I don't know about, I mean, carpenter bees, for example, eat wood, but they don't eat leaves, generally speaking, that I know of. And bumblebees do a lot of the pollinating of tomatoes. Now, we understand that tomatoes pollinate themselves. You know, that's why every time you walk past them, you should shake the cage or rattle the tomato steak just to help that pollen fall. But bumblebees do the same thing in that they buzz the plants. And when they buzz around the plants, they are, in fact, looking for a little nectar, but it also helps the pollen fall from the one flower to the next. So I don't, if you could send me a picture of a bee, that's very difficult to do. But there must be somebody out there that knows bees more than me that would know if there is one. I don't find anything in the research I have available to me here to tell me that there would be something eating the leaves. I'm stumped. Every now and then around here we play Stump the Horticulturist, and today we are playing that. So I have bumblebees, but they don't eat the leaves. They do bang around a little bit. There were a few of them in the cornflowers for no apparent reason. I guess there was nectar there, but it was just an interesting thing. All right, now, today's word, I learned a word this week. I learn words every week, I'm happy to say. But I learned a word this week that you may not know either. This is the folks, the salps. Now, for those of you who know what they are, you're just way ahead of me, and you probably already know that this is a reality that is so interesting that it's being studied again for the future of robotics, all right? Salps are live things. They are gelatinous. They are living in the ocean. And they swim as a colony, okay? They swim in a corkscrew motion. They don't just go forward, and they don't go sideways. They're not like crawfish. They're not going backwards. They're going forward, but they're going forward in a formation that is essentially a corkscrew. Well, what does that do for us? It tells us, if we're smart, that it, as daunting as it seems to try to maneuver through the great ocean depths, we're right. It is tough. And these creatures have found a way to do it that we perhaps can mimic. We can perhaps do more efficient underwater travel, underwater vehicles that operate a little bit more efficiently if we put this corkscrew motion into play. Again, if we just figure out how things work under the ocean, we're going to have a whole lot better luck on the surface. We don't look deeply as we need to it. But I love this. They're salps. And they're little bitty. They look kind of like jellyfish, but every night the colony goes from the bottom to the top, and that for of the ocean, and that's how they do that. So that's in this odd corkscrew motion. It is in fact the largest migration on the planet. It is a vertical migration of planktonic, which is what these things are, planktonic organisms. I haven't seen this movie. I want to see this movie. I want to know, you know, how when people are rowing, sometimes they chant, and when they're marching, they'll do songs and stuff like that. What are the salps singing as they're organizing their corkscrew locomotion through the ocean? I want to know. I need to have this information. Interestingly enough, the collaboration included Louisiana University's Marine Consortium, University of South Florida, Roger Williams University, the Marine Biological Laboratory, and Providence College. These are actually macroplankton, and they are fascinating. I'm tickled that they can teach us things, and I'm really happy to meet the salps. Pretty cool today. If you are doing a couple of the things that I recommended to you, you are looking, for example, to see whether your garlic is turning yellow. Is it time to harvest that garlic yet? The leaves will begin to collapse and let you know that it's time. Potatoes are going into bloom in some places. That lets you know you better be digging around to see what you've got in there. It's also time to plant peanuts. And if you haven't done that yet, now, you know, what's stopping you? It's really time to get busy with all of that. And I like it. Some pretty pictures, aren't they? Those are such lovely things this morning. Y'all are so sweet. Beautiful flowers. Great looking tomato plants, by the way, all over the place. Cute kittens. What do y'all do? It's a social media world. What do y'all do? We look at pictures of plants and cats. Flowers. See, that's that lavender. If anybody's looking and wants to recognize the lavender, tell me which one it is. Tell me if I'm right. Tell me if it's the one with the bigger ears. I think it could be very, very helpful to our caller. I have a couple of other bits and pieces of information today that I think probably we need to put into practice. If you are mowing your yard and you haven't considered whether to fertilize it or not, this is really the way to tell. I stood out in my lawn and realized, I think I talked about my neighbor needing to have greater inflation in one of the tires. He brings his riding mower over and mows my front when he mows his. But it made a few little dinks in the, pretty big dinks, in the lawn, which I'm happy to say have already grown back over because the lawn is quite vigorous. But when your lawn gets damaged like that, that's really a good time to look at it. And I did go out into the part that was not doing so well and parted there to see if I had new growth coming up, which I did. So I did not go to much trouble about it. But if I had not, or if the area around where the damage is, and sometimes it's as simple as the part next to your sidewalk because the grubs are living underneath your lawn next to the sidewalk where it's warm, and you'll see that there's not quite as much grass growing there because it's constricted by the life going on underneath the surface, those kinds of things, that's when you really want to take a look. And you might want to consider fertilizing some or all of your garden, of your lawn, rather. I do want to say to you, and I don't want to be mean, you know. It's not like I think Miracle-Gro is a bad thing or Scotts is a terrible. They've been wonderful to me over the years, and I really like it. But I feel like this kind of preachy thing that if you're not fertilizing your lawn and killing every weed and, you know, bolstering this and boosting that, well, what you want is a green lawn, and you want the turf to be healthy. I'm happy to say that there are ways to get that with a much more moderate approach. And one of those approaches is if your lawn is established, you want to mow it at the height that is recommended for that particular kind of lawn grass. If it's a St. Augustine lawn, I don't care what age it is, it needs to be mowed 3 inches and higher. If that's the way the grass grows. On the other hand, if you've got hybrid Bermuda and a beautiful putting green type lawn, you better not be letting it get any more than an inch, and that's almost too much. In between, you know, we have my zoysia, we have centipede, we have, you know, that's basically what we grow around in this part of the South. But again, it's a matter of the height being mowed at the right height. Then if you want to fertilize and your lawn is already healthy and you just want it to stay that way, consider a modest dose of a slow-release lawn food. That's the sort of thing that's going to be there for weeks at a time. And frankly, as much rain as we've gotten already, may continue to get some, you don't need to throw out a bunch of fertilizer that's going to get lost to you. But if it rained really well and you feel like it needs some fertilizer, that's not a bad time to do it. Yes, if it is a chemical fertilizer, the individual pieces of fertilizer can burn the leaves of lawn grass or anything else, really. So give yourself a reminder to water it in just lightly after you put that fertilizer out. And yeah, I know that means some people will wait until it's going to rain the next time. The problem with that is it might not actually rain at your house, or it might not rain enough, so you still need to pay attention to it. Oh, there are Trey's bees. I'm telling you what, these are the happiest bees I've ever seen. Supertalk.tv for happy bees. Where else are you going to see them?
This is great freeze frame there, too.
So I mean, it really is. He just grabbed them. He got them. Aren't they beautiful?
Yeah, it's
just
job.
Wonderful.
We got some photogs out there.
Oh, yeah, we do. By the way, if you're shooting video, we need to see it. Send it to us. We would like your videos.
MP4, preferably.
Preferably MP4s.
Like the audio, too. You know?
Oh, sure. We'll take the audio.
Hear what you're saying to the bees.
Yep, well, that would be fun.
How did you corral them so well?
They're seriously listening to whatever it is he's telling them. They like him very much today. Ooh, that's a pretty lawn, Greg.
Yeah, it is. You could do some golf putting out there, but I doubt he would let you bring out the pitching wedge.
No, probably not.
No pitching wedges here.
I'm thinking maybe croquet.
Yeah, croquet. Yeah.
Maybe somersaults. Perhaps, you know.
It's a great t-ball yard.
Maybe great t-ball could be. That's just
wiffle ball yard right there.
That's just beautiful.
Pickup football's coming, you can tell. Yeah, it's a great yard for a pickup football game.
I like it. That's the thing. People, you will often see people tell you, have people tell you, or have people write stuff, and you go, maybe. That is about how the lawn is such a waste, that you should plant vegetables because we all need to eat, and you should grow flowers because they're so good for you, and this and that. Well, that's all true, but you know me, I'm in the middle. I want some of all of it, and I particularly want some lawn grass between me and the road in front of my house, because they are the best. A foot of green grass cleans the air better than anything else you can put between you and the road.
Yeah,
that's just the facts.
There was a article that I read last week, is one of those kind of trivia things, but it was the tree day. He's talking about how much oxygen one mature tree puts out in a whole year would be enough for a family of four.
Exactly.
Is what it was.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So, and not only does it put out the oxygen, it also cleans. You have that other side of it.
Both of those ends of the of that particular equation. We've now also got scientists that I was reading about this week who are breeding plants to sequester even more carbon than they do naturally. Well, that's great. Now, if we can just get them to not catch on fire, then we can plant them all over the West Coast. You know, that whole, what's the year? Is it La Nina? Is it El Nino? Who's going to rain? Who's going to not? No matter what it is, California's going to burn. Okay, and probably, unfortunately, Nevada as well. So if you have any control over properties that have the opportunity to do better, to have less flammable things, you need that here, too. You know how many grass fires we have in the South? And you wouldn't think, but after about a week of 100 degrees, we've got a lot of kindling. It's not, some things recover, some things don't. Some things don't. Thank you, Greg. Oh, my goodness. Debbie, those are beautiful. Lovely, lovely roses. Really, really sweet. And I'm going to say, There's something about Milky Way pudding shots that doesn't offend me either, but I see that's for another program.
Yeah, I scrolled up and saw that there was some big colorful going on.
A lot going on there.
I didn't know what that was until I read it. And I was like, oh, that was another program.
Beautiful roses. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Speaking of nice to be right, y'all.
You're on a roll.
Somebody call Steve Azar. We got a song here. He needs to. He wants this. Trust me. Temperature, thyme, and blueberry wine.
That's it.
I'm telling you.
It's got to be a country song.
It could be country. Could be bluegrass, anything.
In that genre.
Anywhere in there. But I'm telling you, when the American Chemical Society starts discussing blueberry wine and how nutritive it is after the flavonoids are made into wine and all these kinds of things, there's a song in there somewhere, y'all. Here comes the sun and here we go. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from 3 licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned almost $100 million in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now, he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, Max and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused career jobs and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae at treasury.ms.gov.
If you're feeling...
Love to your mom, Rhett. And guess what? We know all the words. Someday.
And you can tell. You can
someday, on now that it is, in fact, National Whiskey Day, if it were later in the day, I would be able to tell you the story about that song.
Well, you can thank Buddy.
So dear to my heart.
You can thank the handyman.
We appreciate
for requesting
the handyman.
That one a while back to get cut up, and I did that. So it's in the coffers for us.
Nice there folks, you go, too, Rhett. By the way. There you go. It's all for you. See, we do nice things for people, and I can't help but giggle. So there it is. Another day, another story. That's another one. Back to carbon-gobbling plants, y'all. Now, come on, we're really onto something here. How do these things work, and how do we make them work harder for us? In this case, this one's Australia working on this particular thing. They've discovered a critical enzyme, really, in the blueprint of the whole business that sheds new life on the way that we fix carbon. Now, you understand that a lot of plants fix some carbon. We recognize that we think about legumes. We think about beans and peas. We don't fertilize them very much at all because their job is to fix nitrogen in their own leaves. That is also what makes them such a valuable component to dig into our beds for the next crop, okay? They're just really hardworking plants. But we did not know until now this particular enzyme in cyanobacteria can actually maximize that microorganism's ability to extract carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. This is huge. This is really big. If we can make these things work, now, cyanobacteria, we understand there's problems with it from time to time, but the little blue-green bugs are, they live in the ocean, they live in the everywhere. We understand that's part of the problem of blooms and whatnot, but it's not, they're superheroes at another level. They're a pain and they're noxious right up until they're not. So working to make them work better together with our needs makes a whole lot of sense. They have a system that is called a carbon dioxide concentrating mechanism. You know, we humans, it's going to be called CCM. We could think of something better, but we're not. That lets them fix the carbon from the atmosphere and turn it into sugar more rapidly than anything. I love it. Faster than plants. So if we can figure out a way to harness that power, obviously we will be in better shape. I like it. I like it. That's really fun. We're talking about big egg reports over here, too. The text line is something. Oh, Thomas says, great song. Excellent song, Lance. Good job. And let's see. I don't know, Anthony. We'll have to figure that one out. Anyway, one of the things that I am doing right now, my zinnias have sprouted, and some of them are maybe 3 inches tall with two good sets of leaves on them. I've been waiting to transplant them into the spots where I want to put them because of the heavy rain that was predicted. I'm giving up. I'm going to keep a couple of containers around just in case in the next 48 hours it decides to come a gully washer at my house. It probably won't. But if it does, I will cover them up. This is the sort of thing that we have to do in the summer garden. We want to plant things, but it may be something that needs shade down the way when we plant broccoli in July, for example. Or it may be something that needs protection from the wind, the way my little zinnias are going to need until they can get themselves established. It's like any other kind of support, though. You want it to be useful while it's useful, and then you want to be done with it. I have basil plants sprouted all over the place in different little containers and stuff. I was trying some different soil arrangements. They all seem to work. But that's another plant that you don't want to handle it any more than you have to, but you certainly want to get it where you are, you know, where you absolutely want to get it to, where you want to put it where it's going to grow as soon as you can. Now, I don't always start zinnias out of the soil. A lot of them I will start in the soil, but particularly the smaller ones that I don't want to have to thin the plants, I will start them so then I can put them exactly where I want them. The taller ones, you just seed a little bit thinner in the area, and then when they come up, you can thin the stand like you need to. The Bee Whisperer. Thank you, Trey. Okay, Anthony. Perennial plants. Well, the best perennial plants are the ones that will grow where you want them to grow. If you're talking about a sunny garden, probably things like black-eyed Susans and even purple coneflowers. The phloxes will do well there. Those are some things that will work. But on the other hand, if you're in the shade, I'll be planting hostas underneath a tree today that I've got a space under. They do very, very well there. And they will still bloom. So will Lenten roses. And frankly, if you can find the perennial begonias, they'll do well in that circumstance too. I've lost mine. I don't have them anymore. But really, the perennials depend on what color flowers you're looking for, or whether you want it to be more foliage-driven, like Hecara coral bells. There's just too many. Tell me where you want to plant them, and I might be able to help you with some choices. I'm working on that for somebody right now, too. Y'all are funny. Oh, my goodness. One of these days, we're going to have a program where someone comes in here and just reads texts for hours on end.
Right. I love Trey. He always has great
Trey
stuff.
Trey has great
but
stuff.
My mamaw did make a great NyQuil, and it had the peppermint.
This was before NyQuil was invented, John.
You didn't need NyQuil. But Trey put a great picture of the Cajun version of NyQuil.
Yes, the Cajun version.
Throw a handful of peppermints, a whole bag of them in there, and shake it up. The Cajun NyQuil recipe.
My father was a teetotaler, and even he would put a little bit of what he called toddy. It was basically bourbon into the cold medicine. This was long before NyQuil was invented. He would have the peppermints, and he would have the honey, and then he would have his little shot of bourbon. He was not much on that. Trey is agreeing with us now. That's funny. Let's see. It helps a little bit. Yep, something is eating your zinnias. Jamie's in Oxford. I'm going to say because the new leaves are not affected and they are taller, that it could be slugs and snails, that you're just not seeing them because they're only there eating at night. Now, if you turn the leaves over and you find a little worm about a half an inch long, that's different. But when you dust with seven, it should take care of the worm problem, so perhaps it did work. But on the other hand, if it doesn't, oftentimes it's slugs and snails. There's diatomaceous earth you can put around the plants. There are slug repellents that you can put around your plants. But it looks to me like this might be that. Or you treated it with seven dust and it was a little chewing insect and they're gone now. But it just depends on what you saw. That kind of serious holes in the leaves can be done by, sometimes they look just like they were done with a hole punch, you know. And they can be done by little tiny worms that have hatched and are looking for something to eat, but they can also be done by the slugs and snails. If you find that you do have slugs in your garden, I cleaned out I moved some containers that are empty this week, trying to get to be able to mow around them and whatnot. And as a result, I found the darkest, coldest, dankest, dampest spot underneath a pallet that the pots were on top of, and that's where the slugs live. So if you have that kind of environment, go disrupt it today. Be a disruptor. Find a way to undo that. It might be underneath your old, firewood stack or some old lumber that you even have that you might have taken off of something and just stacked up by the garage. If it creates a space that can stay nice and damp and dark, the slugs are going to find it and they're going to live there. If you can get rid of that inhabitant, you know, get them so they can't live there, take away their habitation, they'll move on and go someplace else, hopefully to the neighbors without any problem. You know, I like that. There's so much research being done. Oh my goodness. I don't even know if we're going to get to all of this today. But there's some wonderful things being done in our own part of the world that benefit us as gardeners because we care about the environment around us. Here's a factoid for you from Florida Atlantic University. Florida will lose 3.5 million acres of native wild lands to development by 2070. That's really not that long from now, to lose another 3.5 million acres. What they're working on now is ways that they can buffer Florida against both the population pressure, but also the inevitable climate change. You know, Florida is one of those places where any projection that you see shows that the rise in sea level it causes a loss for Florida. So they're working on a really amazing, they've got 8 million acres of what they're calling opportunity areas. This is all within the Florida Wildlife Corridor, a very important statewide access space. The whole thing, trying to get these things to stay open and yet at the same time continue to support the development of the state, is a really difficult thing. Florida has the added, you know, hurricanes and temperatures that are rising faster, different precipitation patterns than they've seen before, and all of the things that we understand about. This particular study is working on how they can do this, keep these interconnected areas of wetlands and wildlands and still live around them. So if they can do that, it's going to be delightful because Florida has a lot of appeal to it, but it has the greater appeal is that it's wild in places. Anybody can have condos. A lot of places can have beaches, but nothing's quite as wild as the wild parts of Florida. Oh, this is pretty. Really very, very nice. Sarah's in Monroe County, and these are some beautiful, beautiful purple cone flowers. They're lovely. I do love that flower. You know, that's one of those plants that has been worked on so much, and you can get white ones and yellow ones and pink ones and purple ones and every shade in between. And there's beautiful, beautiful plants. The reason we like them so much, of course, is because they can tolerate our conditions. They are native to the southeastern part of the United States. So even the ones that are a little fancier that have been bred for a particular quality or this or that we're looking for, At that same time, we have the opportunity to appreciate them for being a very rugged plant. And when I always want folks to put in some of the traditionals, that maybe even just the species of purple coneflower, but don't overlook the more modern, interesting hybrids. With some of them have a different height plant, different length stem, for example, or they have a bigger flower or a different color flower or a more prominent cone, you know, less prominent, all that sort of stuff. Just the differences in them, they're all pretty easy to grow. And I think that can make a big difference in how we look at them. It's not that you're only going to grow that, but it can be certainly the staple of your environment in a nice, well-drained, but not fancy perennial bed. Georgia's saltwater marshes, of course, wow, they're beautiful. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that particular coast, but it's a beauty. There are not that many things that live there. And we know about our need for grasses at our coast. Georgia Tech biologists are working, they're trying to get their ecological processes to work a little bit better, to have greater diversity in the management of the grasses so that, one gets sick, we don't lose all of them. And that's important for all of us. Plants depend on the microbes, of course, in their tissues. And if we can bolster that, then it can help the plants to get through times of serious bad weather or perhaps floods, I mean, whatever it is that's going to happen to them. One of the things that we haven't always understood is really the ways that bacteria interact. When I talk to you about root development and the fact that roots exude, their exudate is where the bacteria forms its colonies. They all feed one another. It is a very symbiotic, in many cases, and certainly not parasitic ever, relationship. That's the same thing that we're talking about in work with these grasses. Cordgrass and the little communities that inhabit their roots, they're really important to get in there and take a look and figure out which of the bacteria are there and which ones are helping. Which ones they can really use to do a little bit more. But this whole business from feeding the roots, I tell you all the time, feed the roots, then feed the plants. In this case, you don't feed grasses very much, but you sure do need to feed their roots in order for them to be able to explore their growing area in the most efficient way. And we need to understand that out in the marsh, that whole business of nitrogen fixation is even more important than it is maybe in my backyard where I might be able to go out and give a little nitrogen to something that needs it. So this whole topic today of nitrogen fixation has really been interesting to me. I was reading this week and exploring, well, how come we don't put that to work more? And then suddenly we are. So I'm glad when I can catch up. You catch up too. We've got one more segment. So you've got texts to send or photos, or you want to give me a call. Now's the time and this is the place.
A town so long ago where the sweet magnolia blossoms, cotton fields were white as snow, catfish John was a river hobo, lived and died by the river's bend.
If someone you know is dealing with addiction, remember they're fighting an internal battle with themselves. They don't need to battle with you too. At Allies in Recovery, you can become an ally. By following a free online course, you'll learn a compassionate approach to reform relationships and start treatment. Lead them to recovery with a method that's scientifically proven to be more successful than others. Start for free at alliesinrecovery.net/sponsored.
We are advocacy, a century of wins, protecting private property rights, advancing technology, sustaining our land, conserving our natural resources, all to pass on to the next generation. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
The bets made.
He be making like a feline, heading for the borderline, going for broke. Saying one more hit, I'll do it. This giant.
more but the
every song out there and every plant too, my friends. Goodness gracious, sometimes they come together. That's for another day. I had no idea about this, y'all. There's zombie cells out there in the ocean. I don't know if I even want to talk about that, but it has to do with the phage, and it has to do with phage invading the bacteria. And then when they do that, the bacteria grow fast and then they disappear. And it's because it's all about the phage. There isn't actually any ribosome life left in there. It is a zombie cell, and they are in the ocean. Good heavens. Somehow you feel like you could have made that story up, but it turned out it was true. Marks in Union. Oh, yeah, trying to keep the deer and the squirrels out. That's an ongoing thing, isn't it? Pretty potatoes, too. That's beautiful. Looking great. I have never done this, but I am told that I am told this is terrible, that this is not uncommon, but I've never seen it except this one time. Hanging soap so the deer don't get around your garden and dipping the towels in bleach and stuff. I don't want to look at that either. I don't know. Build a fence. No, that's hard. Betty's in Flora. Welcome into the Garden Mama Show. What's on your mind today?
Good morning. My tomato plant, where the stem is attached to the tomato as it's growing, the little tomato.
Mm-hmm.
Something breaking the stem or biting it.
Mm-hmm.
Where the stem's attached to the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not eating the tomato, it's just falling off.
Okay. And it is a bite into the stem?
I guess it's...
Okay. I mean, in other words, it's not just dissolved and fallen off. It's separated. Okay. Okay. Do you have any of the classic things like seven dust or in any vegetable garden dust or that kind of stuff? The reason I'm saying that is because...
I've got seven dust.
Okay. I would use that because... If it turns out that it is not a chewing insect per se, it will be less attractive to whatever's trying to bite on it. And in this case, we certainly want those to stay. As long as they're getting good water and you've been giving them fertilizer, there are critters that will climb in there and eat that, knock that tomato off. But there are also physical processes that will cause them to drop off. So since it doesn't seem like that they're just dropping, I would use the seven dust.
It's not on all the tomatoes. It's just like it picked out a few and
mm-hmm. I would go ahead and dust them well, dust everything well once, and see if we can't get this cleared up. You don't want it to just move from. You don't want if it's a crawling insect, you don't want it to just crawl to the other. You know, if it's a little beetle or something, you don't want it to hop over to the next plant. Mm-hmm. So let's get them under control. Okay.
I looked for worms. I didn't look for beetles, though.
Mm-hmm. Take a look.
Okay,
they might be there. Now, the other way to find beetles, of course, is really, really early in the morning, you go out and put a sheet or something underneath that can catch them and wiggle the plants. Because beetles sleep late and they're slow in the early morning.
Okay.
So sometimes we can knock them off. That might help. Thank you, Betty. Appreciate you. That's a mean thing for me to say, but it's true. It's absolutely the truth. Let's see. Oh, Bobby from Monticello. Nellie, why does my Meyer lemon tree keep losing its blooms? There's several things. They can be washed off. Literally, just the rain can happen at the wrong time and they can all fall off. Or you may not have the right fertilizer happening for the tree. This is one of the aspects of citrus fertilizer that I like is because it provides everything in a large enough quantity to hold the flowers and hold the fruit. So I use Espoma. I'm not saying you should use that. You may not be able to find that particular one. But if you find a citrus fertilizer, you're going to have a better result. It can be that the flowers can fall off occasionally because the temperature is too cold or the wind is too high, but it's usually a fertilizer problem. And sometimes they'll shed a few because they want to hold on to the others. but that's not usually the case. Obviously, if they don't get pollinated, the flowers will fall off, but you would have seen the flower. If they all just fall off routinely, it's probably not a pollination problem. It's a nutrition one. I hope that makes sense. Some more of those beautiful echinaceas. That's so pretty. Lovely, lovely. I do love some coneflowers. Andrea's got all different colors. They're pretty. I love that. I do like that there's kind of apricot-y ones, but there's also sort of an orange. So the two together, sometimes when you put two colors together like that, whether it is in a vase or in a garden bed, or, you know, you might even be making a patchwork quilt. When you put the two things that together that are strong, they both look better. And particularly if they tend to be a little bit on the antique-y side in terms of their color, the dustier colors, they really look better next to each other because one's depth wears for the other. And those are things that you find out when you're doing any kind of flower arranging, even if it's my kind of flower arranging, which is basically cutting anything in bloom and sticking it into something. I'm good at it, but I'm better at appreciating the flowers than I am at arranging them. With all apologies to my friends who do that professionally, I give y'all all the credit because I'm not that good at that. However, if you want to learn all that stuff, we should have James Dale Prince on here someday. There's all kind of ways to learn floral design, and he's apparently the best teacher. From the work that I see his students have done, they're getting it, and that's wonderful. I'm not that smart, but he is. Don't forget to mark your calendar for June the 3rd, Monday morning, 9:30 in the morning, that's right, at Lakeland Yard and Garden. We're going to be doing repotting container plants. Becky Potts is kindly going to be with me to do that, and I'm looking forward to it very, very much. I have have so many notes today that I'm not going to get to, but I did want to talk just for a moment about the Maison Creek fossil site. This is so interesting to me. We have found a spider that we never found before in the fossil collection. And so that tells you about how did that thing get there? How do we know this? What's that all about? Well, the person, Bob Mazek, who first documented this particular site in the 1980s, the Maison Creek fossil site, did a whole lot of work and donated his collection to this Douglas family I don't know that he donated it. They acquired it, I should say, and then put it in their primitive museum. But now they have in turn given it more work because they wanted to try and understand more things about it. They went to the University of Kansas with this thing. This is from the Carboniferous coal forests of North America. And interestingly enough, this is Douglas arachne, Acanthopoda. Now, why am I speaking that to you? Because if you know this, it's so interesting. The Douglas family gets credit. It's their spider, okay? And indeed, they're such a bizarre arachnid. It's not even really a spider. Therefore, the second half of its name is Acanthopoda to tell you about those crazy big legs, long legs that it has. It's a very different creature from the ones that we expected. No matter how long we live on the earth, there is something else to learn. That's all there is to that. I hope your garden's teaching you something today, and I hope that you will choose to be kind to it and to all the people that you encounter this week. We'll be back again next Saturday for more. This is the Garden Mama Show. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you, Lance.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Do you ever-
ever feel like you are in the dark? Well, with a propane generator, you'll never be in the dark again, at least when the lights go out. Enjoy the comfort and safety of knowing you have a propane generator always ready when the electricity goes out. Propane generators assure you will always have power. Propane-fueled, clean cooking, hot water on demand, warm and consistent heat and power when you need it most. Why would you choose anything else? Propane. Clean American energy. Visit mspropane.com today.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to mwgemployerservices.com.
Mississippi resident.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.